Our guest in episode 5 of Ladies That Are Making a Difference is Nikki Wilson, founder of 10 of Zen. Nikki's social business provides mindfulness tools, group meditation sessions and micro Zen exercises, supporting a huge number of mums so they can stress less and love more. She set up 10 of Zen 2 years ago and has grown an incredible following of mums looking for some Zen time and inspiration of how to deal with the motherload in our modern world. Listen to Nikki's story of how her adventure into motherhood led her along this amazing path from her position as a CEO of a charity to setting up her own business. She'll share with us information about her services and some of her favourite Zen hacks, which I can't wait to hear. Nikki will also talk to us about the hot topics that her Zen squad are encountering, plus the solutions and resources open to them to help them keep a balance in their daily lives. So let's take some Zen time together and listen to the inspiring lady, Nikki Wilson, who is definitely a lady that is making a huge difference to many. Welcome to the podcast, Nikki.
Thank you, Katie.
So lovely to have you join us in this meaningful podcast series. Our paths crossed, actually, didn't they, at a wellness talk.
I did.
I think I was speaking there and you were sitting in the front and I thought, I've got to speak to this lady.
Being a teen bean, like, oh, I love everything she's saying.
I remember that moment very clearly. And then I joined one of your Zenimars on Instagram and I couldn't believe it. I could not believe how relaxed I felt after that.
Really?
It was amazing. Oh, seriously, it was amazing. And it was literally 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I thought, right, I've got to speak to this lady. And I know you're helping many others in our busy world, many mums, and you're making a huge positive social impact. So it's fantastic to have you here.
Thank you for asking me.
On this amazing series called Ladies That Are Making a Difference, because you are doing exactly that. So I just want to get, you know, let everybody know all about you. Can you tell our listeners about 10 of Zen and the story of how you set it up almost 2 years ago?
Of course I can. So yeah, you summed it all up there. 10 of Zen is basically social business. I'm teaching mindfulness tools and training to mums. So 2 years ago, this is quite... It's hard to be really specific on this, Katie, because when you kind of peel it back and peel it back and peel it back, the kind of story around 10 of Zen might have kind of started in some form actually in 2014 when I had my first son, but the real story goes all the way back.
Okay.
So can you afford me a few minutes?
I can.
I think I'll be able to sew it together a lot more effectively.
Absolutely.
And I'll get there in the end.
Go for it. Go for it. We want to hear the whole story, not just half of it.
The whole story. Okay. So if you kind of cast back to a mini Nikki, we're in my house, we might even have a few photos of mini Nikki around. I was very much born, or at least I'm born from a line of pretty anxious souls.
Okay.
So that was kind of already in the DNA. And then equally, I grew up in a household where there was a lot of conflict and difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
And also where my brother, age 4.5, we lost him to cancer.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
Yes.
I didn't realise.
Yeah.
Gosh.
So...
Tricky times.
Yes. And you might say, well, how on earth is that? What's that got to do with mindfulness? But really, it kind of begins to explain, I guess, how and why much later on I went through my maternal mental health struggles and then why mindfulness came to be such a good thing. Because the way so many adaptable, small, young humans... make changes around difficulty is we still find ways to thrive, don't we? So for me, as a, you know, still that mini Nikki, I was all about the get out there, be seen, sought most of my validation through kind of being seen, being an achiever,
yeah,
a joiner in a and probably became fit into that box of overachiever, I would say, over the years. And yet inside, the story was always different.
Mm.
Yeah, I would say I've struggled with a sense of loneliness. I always had a big dose of nervous energy going on in the background. And my stories were about taking other people's pain away. They were about you know, avoiding death and dying. And I know this is bleak, this is hard for question one, but just it kind of just explains really, because if you fast forward then to 2014, the year I had Thomas, I was so happy to be pregnant, fortunate enough, and I count myself very, very fortunate to be in a really loving marriage, and we really wanted our son. You know, I was rosy and romantic about the whole thing. And yet, on the day of his coming into the world, and I will spare you those details.
Okay, fair enough.
You know, I had a very difficult, very long birth experience where I lost half of my blood, was rushed into theatre and so on, and spent a number of days in hospital in the days that followed, and became very physically and mentally quite poorly quite quickly. Physically, I was incredibly exhausted.
Not surprised.
Tired and wired like so many new mums.
Yeah.
And basically I had an experience in hospital where I closed my eyes and I couldn't move, but I was still semi-conscious, and to me that's how I'd imagined dying was always going to be.
So very scary.
Very scary. So in my all of my past and my past world, I collided in with my new world.
Yeah.
And suddenly it was like, oh man, this is my time to tap out. This wasn't part of the plan. So they took Thomas away, and it was a very, very acute, hard experience to go through. And then as a result, quite quickly, you know, in the hours latterly that I was sent home and so on, I began to show quite quickly signs of very acute PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
So I went from, you know, 2 weeks before running a national charity, doing the commuter thing, to not being able to leave my own bedroom without having a panic attack.
Mm.
So hypersensitive to everything that I couldn't even look out the window because the light was too much bright for my eyes.
Mm.
And very hypervigilant. So, you know, most people who've been through this type of experience become kind of very hypervigilant to threat and safety, but in a way that's just much more elevated than your average new mum who's generally very vigilant anyway.
Yeah.
So basically the perfect or imperfect storm occurred. And I remember saying at the time, I feel like my life has been broken into 25 million pieces.
Wow, that's powerful.
And I couldn't conceive of how I would ever put it back together.
I'm not surprised, yeah.
So really, and that's where the 10 of Zen journey starts at that point. So we have this cataclysmic collision of past and current world, and all the rosy and romantic's gone well out of the window.
Yes.
And basically, you know, that bubble of nervous energy that had always been there went from an average of 8 out of 10 to 850,000. So I there began a very slow process of putting those 25 million pieces back together.
Well done you.
Yes, and I'm not alone, and I'm sure multiple people listening to this will have been in places in their lives where they felt like they hit rock bottom. Because that's part of human existence, isn't it? So yeah, that was the beginning of putting life back together. So there's lots of different tools I used, and remarkably 9 months later I went back to work, which was well, you're dropping your job.
I was going to say,
so,
you can't see my reaction, but 9 months.
Yeah, I was so poorly still, but it was part of this obsession that if I was going to be myself again, I had to get back and do what I was doing before.
Yes.
But I remember the conversation I had with a coach at the time, which was, what do I do if I panic at my desk?
Yes.
What do I do if I, you know, even just getting on the train was hard. So it was my classic, I'm going to push through mentality still cropping up.
Yes.
So I used lots of different hacks and tools. I often talk about my 3 M's, which I very much use on that return to work, which was makeup, which is my war paint. Slap that on, no one will see.
I love that.
Medication, which I came to later on in the journey, but definitely allowed me more space to heal. And meditation.
Fantastic.
Love
it.
Yes, those were my 3 M's. And if I look back to now, Thomas is 5, nearly 6, Makeup's for special occasions. I did put my mascara on for you, Katie.
Oh, wow, you look beautiful. Thank you, I appreciate that.
I don't take the medication anymore, and I say that with no, like, celebratory tone.
Yes.
Because I, you know, I believe I may at some point in my life need to be on it again, but it's just as an FYI. Mm. But I do still take my regular meditation, because for me, that was life-changing.
Yes.
In terms of a discovery. So it's in short, I at the time of being incredibly unwell, I stumbled across a couple of meditations on my phone. I'd always been into all things Eastern, but by no means a yogi. I did have some meditations on my phone, and I stumbled across a couple, and each was 10 minutes. One was on acceptance, one was on compassion. And each time I listened to them, I felt like I felt stronger, I felt more able to keep going.
Yeah.
And the normal feelings of stress that come with motherhood definitely just took the edge off things. And Thomas started saying, with my husband, obviously he couldn't quite talk at that point, but they came up this phrase that mummy's gone for a 10 of Zen.
Yeah.
So it was just a family thing that mum's gone for a 10 of Zen, and it stuck. And from that point, Rob could see it was make a difference.
Yes.
He'd say, have you gone for your 10 of Zen? Go take the 10 of Zen. So that was 2014.
Wow.
And then 2017, when I had the year I had my second son, I didn't go back after my maternity leave.
Okay.
Quit my job, quit the 9 to 5, and thought I'm just gonna spread the Zen love far and wide.
Well,
became
done.
A mindfulness teacher.
Yeah. That's honestly a mind blowing.
Yes, sorry.
Story.
I went big.
Do not apologize. I am, you know, the word that came into my mind was courageous.
Mm.
I mean, when you just feel like, I am sort of trying to tune into how you would have felt like, but I can't possibly imagine, you know, like everything, your whole world is tipped upside down, and you built yourself up from the central point almost with your, not just your, your Zen hacks or 10 of Zens, but also your family, you know, building you up and just having that patience to almost be 5 years down the line from that traumatic experience and to have be flourishing and blossoming.
Well, not every day, and I certainly didn't feel patient and courageous every day.
You're helping so many people, Nikki, as well as yourself, so take that pat on the back. And you know, hats off to you and your support network. That is an incredible story, and I think many mothers, from the ones that I've been in touch with, I'm a mum of two, and I've met many others who have been pushed so hard physically in the process of giving birth.
Yeah.
Some have had a dream, and some, you know, have had the other end of the scale.
Yeah.
And it's about pulling everything together in the, you know, through your business, I suppose, and just having that support network that people can get a bit of time out, slow down, because we're so good at speeding up, and actually honour the process.
Yes, yeah.
And almost surrender to what's happened and kind of go, this has happened for a reason.
Nothing in my life had ever forced me that hard to, you know, slow down. Couldn't leave my house, so that was a whole new ball game.
Hats off to you. You've done so well, and you've helped set up this framework, you know, that clearly worked for you, that I know many other mothers are tapping into it in their way,
their own way.
And
absolutely,
we're going to talk about that in a bit more detail, but
you
know, round of applause to you, my goodness
you.
Me. And, you know, I was going to ask you about your journey into motherhood, and it sounds like your second experience of having your second child wasn't quite so physically intensive as the first, which I'm so happy
totally
to hear.
Totally different. And, again, very long story short, but at the time, no one had any idea what was wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
PTSD is not very well known postnatally still, even though almost 40% of women find some aspect of their birth traumatic. So there was a lot of no one really knowing what was going on. And then couple of years later, my mum heard a Radio 4 program on postnatal PTSD.
Brilliant.
She said, I think you need to listen to that. It was a very hard listen, but suddenly everything made sense.
Yes.
And that took me on a journey to find a therapist who was very specialised in this work. And she became my pregnancy project manager with Matty.
Fantastic.
That's what I call her anyway.
Yes.
So she supported Rob and me and Matty, my belly, through what was obviously naturally an incredibly hard time.
Yeah. Yes.
Because in the same, you know, we associate PTSD with men going to war. Mm. And she said to me at the beginning, you know, the difficulty is you never would have sent those men back to the jungle.
Mm. Yeah,
if you want another baby.
Yes.
You have to go back to the jungle.
And you know what's coming, potentially. I mean, each birth is different.
Yeah, your rational mind might be able to wrap itself around thinking, it's okay, I'll be safe, I won't die this time. But it goes so much deeper than that. You hold that trauma in your whole body. So I was very scared.
Yeah.
But it was a different thing.
Okay.
And Matty, the experience of having Matty was very healing. And probably the biggest thing I learned throughout all of it was just, and it's a huge lesson and a hard lesson to learn, was to find strength in vulnerability.
Yes.
I had to learn to be vulnerable.
That's not easy.
No. Especially when you spent your life looking after, you know, my role was about making things better. You know, I was the baby that came after my brother who passed away. I was all about, that's my script, right?
Yes.
This is what I do, make
you
things
have to
better
change the script.
Mm. And suddenly I had to do a lot of, I'm not okay. I'm not okay and it's okay.
Yeah.
And that really is kind of the biggest, I guess, gift and the biggest learning that's come out of the whole thing.
Amazing. Amazing. And did the midwives give you any sort of, when I say midwives, any of the health workers that you came into contact with through the doctor surgery, did they give you any tips of, you know, this good website, or would you like to go along to this meetup or anything like that? Because
I'm interested in knowing
what's out there. I don't know myself.
Very little. The reason I was incredibly well looked after in my second pregnancy was because I had a therapist who we'd spent hard-earned money to fund because we couldn't get that support in the NHS.
Right.
Who basically wrote letters to all the right people.
Okay.
And I was very well supported.
Mm.
Not signposted really at all, but the NHS used its intuition. It knew how to treat me.
Right.
And at every step of the journey, I was incredibly held and well looked after.
Right.
And it's very easy for that not to happen. And the only reason that happened was because I had this therapist who basically wrote all these letters in red.
Joke.
It's like, it was
white,
like they'd given a letter which explained the circumstance, and they'd be like, okay, right, and it, you know, enough said.
Yeah.
And they'd, you know, they'd give me the care I needed.
Great.
So I was incredibly well looked after.
Look, at the end of the day, I'm just pleased to hear that you're well looked after.
Yeah,
and
I was.
Hadn't put you off, you know. So that's something to be celebrated.
Yes.
Well done.
But
you.
I will say, if anybody is listening to this, so I'm an ambassador and a strategy lead for a campaign called Make Birth Better.
Oh, okay.
So,
brilliant. I've not heard of that.
Yeah, we're a growing campaign and a resource hub for anybody that feels that they've experienced trauma through birth, and we're on a mission to
Fantastic.
Make birth better. So look that up. It's @birthbetter on Instagram, and the website is Make Birth Better, and there's loads of resources for people out there. So
thank you for mentioning that, and I will mention that again at the end, because I think it's important for people. So you can grab a pen as you're listening and we will give you the website details at the end. Make Birth Better. Fantastic. 10 of Zen, you mentioned it earlier on that, you know, your lovely husband and son were sort of saying, Mummy's gone for her 10 of Zen
time.
Yeah. And this is how your business, you did a CEO role of a charity, which we'll talk about later on, but you basically built this up pretty much from your experience, became a mindfulness coach.
Yeah.
And tell us about it now. What do you do?
What do I do?
What is 10 of Zen? All the amazing resources. Because I've had a look, but I want Nikki to tell you, because she's the expert.
Yeah. It's quite quirky because it doesn't really exist as a job, so far as I can find. It's very niche. But basically, the idea is that I'm helping and supporting mums to take regular breaks. So
mm-hmm.
my commitment to myself is a regular 10 minutes, and I try and take that as many days as possible. Most days I do it. For most mums, even that is too far of a stretch.
Mm.
So I supply kind of little micro Zen hacks that last kind of 2 minutes or less. And then, so the way the business is working is I'm really committed to offer as much free content as I can. That's
mm-hmm.
the social element of the business.
Mm-hmm.
So on my website, I have a free meditation library. I can't remember how many meditations are on there.
Lots.
Yes, because I've had a look and tapped in. They're
brilliant. They're all themed, and basically they all last 10 minutes. So that's all free. That's had about 2,500 people listen to it, which I'm really proud of. Yeah, I kind of can't quite believe that. And then I run, you mentioned a Zenimar. So yes. I try and hold these as regular as I can on Thursday evenings. I then share them on Facebook. Basically, they're short conversations normally with another person while I'll host a meditation. Other times they're just interesting chats about mental health.
Mm.
Tonight's is on children's mental health, actually.
Okay, fascinating. Right.
So that's my kind of free commitment. And then my next level is I run a, what I've called my Zen squad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I love that, Zen squad.
So my real passion, Katie, is in all of this. Obviously, mindfulness meditation has been wildly and rightly so popularized, mm-hmm. largely with thanks to Headspace, Calm, all of the great apps that are out there yeah. now, the fact that the science is there to back it up. Which is great. In fact, I read an article this morning which said 1 in 3 Americans believe it to be an essential part of their morning routine.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, actually. Yeah.
So it's beginning, you know, people get it. It makes sense.
Yeah.
But what people don't talk about is how bloody hard it is to keep up the habit. A, to set the habit in the first place, but B, to keep it up.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is my passion for the Zen Squad, really, is about helping mums.
Yeah.
To coach them really in a really realistic format to keep this stuff up. So I have almost 50 women and it's growing all the time. And basically every Sunday night I host a live 10 of Zen at 9 o'clock, recorded. If they can't make it, they catch up. So that session lasts maximum 15 minutes. And then in the week on a Tuesday and a Thursday, everyone's in their small WhatsApp groups and I record them a little 2-minute micro Zen. And they press play. 2 minutes and they take their Zen. And we basically just, we're a community of calm seeking mums. We all, most people know it's something they want to do but struggle to keep it up. Other people want to learn. So it's a mixture of reasons that people have joined. That is my passion project. I've price matched Headspace.
Yeah.
Pretty sure Andy, the founder of Headspace, makes a lot more money than I am because it's only £5 a month. But that's, you know, my passion, kind of to support as many people as possible.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And trying to get people into habits, as you were saying, you know, the mindfulness practices, don't worry.
That's probably the husband that's in hospital.
Yes.
Give me 1 second. Oh no, it's the father-in-law. There we go. Sorry.
Do not worry. That's absolutely fine. This is what life can be like as a mom,
right?
Is,
isn't it?
Let's not pretend. But yeah, so I was just about to say that trying to get people into routines, you know, to make something a habit that naturally happens. And as humans, we were very habitual in our behaviours. Yeah. We're both psychology students, backgrounds, so we're on the same zone and mindset. But 30 days, you know, to do something for 30 days seems to be, if you do it regularly, after 30 days, it becomes natural. Yeah. And that can be really hard. Because it's a bit like the first couple of weeks, that's easy. And then, you know, you know it's hard. But by setting the times, by, you know, the Tuesdays, Thursdays, Sundays, and so on, you're helping people, you're nurturing your audience and the people that are needing help to get into that routine. I love that. Exactly. So well done you.
Thank
and you do workshops too, don't you?
I do workshops, and then I also have a teaching program called Teach 10. So what doesn't really exist in mindfulness teacher training at the moment is ways to support people with really realistic mindfulness hacks and hints and tips. If you're going to learn to be a mindfulness teacher, generally you have to learn to teach very highly involved programs, which are great, but they're very involved.
Right.
So I've designed a program where I'm teaching people how to teach mindfulness, but how they can teach 10 of Zen, so how they can teach short, confidently share short mindfulness sessions with others, because none of it's rocket science. So handing over the core knowledge, the scripts, and building a cohort of, I've got 20 now, 10 of them teachers.
20, that's amazing. And I saw on one of your Instagram posts, Emma, who had done the baby bonding groups, and you're celebrating that because she obviously did one of your workshops, and now look what she's doing. Yes. She's supporting.
She's sewing it into her baby
bonding. I love that. Yeah. So if any of you listeners are interested in that, then again, listen out for the website details at the end, and you can go on and look in all the amazing workshops, and they are amazing. You know, I love that in your on your website
you talk about helping mothers stress less and love more.
Yeah.
And by looking even at your workshops, it kind of made me go, oh yes, I've got brain strain. That's what I've got. I should go to Nikki's course. Because let's face it, we're all, you know, we're needing to keep the energy levels up, and we are multitasking.
Yeah.
Absolutely, multitasking.
Yeah.
So we've all got a bit of brain strain.
Everybody's got some brain strain going on, haven't we?
Absolutely.
I like this analogy of there being a ticker tape, you know, like at the bottom of the news, I think especially for mums and for women. It's just a constant ticker tape, isn't there?
Absolutely.
Constant.
It is. Yeah. And it can be joyful, you know, you can have your laughs about it.
Yeah.
But when it becomes stressful, that's when it eats away at you and you kind of need to get the right balance. So, do look at the website details, because you will absolutely love it. So you talked about, you know, becoming a coach for mindfulness. What are the benefits of, you know, mindfulness exercises and meditation exercises, and obviously trying to do this on a regular basis?
Yeah.
What's going on? Why is it so good?
Why is it so good? Well, to demonstrate, Katie, what I thought I'd do is to sew in a micro zen.
Yes,
so
let's do
this
it.
This is my favourite way of explaining to people how it works, but also where we get to kind of take a moment and say
yes, let's do it.
So wiggle yourself around, get yourself comfy on your chair.
Okay.
They're a bit hard, these chairs, but you know, do the best you can. And you can choose whatever feels most safe with your eyes. So you could just fuzzy down your gaze, or you can close your eyes completely, whatever works.
Okay.
And just settle. And then what I'd like you to do is just see if you can invite your awareness to travel through the body. So let's go through the shoulders, down through the main part of the body, through the torso, the bum, through the legs, the knees, and arriving at the feet. So see if you can just hold your attention as best you can with the feet. You might like to almost count through each of the toes, the big toe, second toe, third toe, fourth toe, baby toe. Feel across the soles of the feet. And what's happening as you do this, as you train your attention in this way over time, the physiology of the brain is that you're shifting out of your stress center, so your amygdala, your limbic region. And just by playing with our attention in this way, we move the focus in our minds more to our frontal part of our brain, the wiser part of our brain. So it helps to dial down the stress center. So that's how the attention part of mindfulness works. So next, just see if you can draw the attention back up through the feet, through the lower half of the legs, the knees, the upper half of the legs, through the bum, feeling that connection with the chair, up again, and see if you can wrap your awareness around the breath for a minute. And let's take what I call some purposeful breaths together. Okay, so we go in through the nose. Nice long out breath. Great. So take a couple more of those, Katie, in your own time. That's a great, nice, smooth, long out breath. And as you take that last breath, I'll just explain, is that basically as you elongate the out breath, or simply just regulate your breathing, you're tapping into your body's natural rest and digest system. So simply by breathing, especially those long out breaths, you're allowing your body to relax.
That makes sense.
That makes sense, yeah. It's the opposite to the stress response. The long out-breath taps into the parasympathetic nervous system.
Mm.
So then lastly, lift up a hand for me, place it over the heart center. Just take a moment to really feel that connection between the hand and the chest. Notice the breath a bit more naturally now. The hand rises and falls. just focus on that feeling of that soothing touch between your hand and your heart. Using that connection to maybe offer yourself a bit of consideration, some congratulation for showing up right now. The science here, again, is that by touching, adding some soothing touch in this way, you tap into your natural caregiving system. So all mums will know about the cuddle chemical oxytocin. Simply by raising a hand and offering some soothing touch, you switch on your own cuddle chemicals. Most people don't know that they can do this for themselves. And we rely on others, which is great. We need others. But every now and then we can learn to offer this stuff to ourselves. Because your body doesn't know the difference between a hand, your hand on your heart and someone else's hand on your heart. So you're basically tricking yourself into a bit of the love stuff.
So clever.
So there you go. That's the ABC. So A for awareness, and you don't need to do the science with it. You can drop that anytime. A, awareness into body. B, into breath. C, into centre.
I just love that. I mean, so to describe how I feel now, I feel really relaxed. Not that I wasn't relaxed, Nikki, in your presence before, but I feel really relaxed and warm, actually. I definitely feel nice and warm and so connected.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, you know, at the start of the podcast, I wasn't really thinking about the sensations in my legs and my toes. But now I'm feeling fully, you know, because I've been rushing around like everybody else today. So I love that. Thank you. And I was hoping you were going to do one of your special Zen, you know, exercises and hacks. And that's such a quick one that we can, well, hopefully the listeners have done it along with us.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not difficult to remember.
No.
You can just do that anytime and give yourself permission to do that. And your digestive system and everything will love you for it. And you'll notice the benefits. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I love that.
You know what is interesting, Katie, is actually, say it's not difficult to remember ABC. It's not difficult to bank that as a concept, but it is difficult to remember to do it.
Yes.
Because it's counterintuitive.
Yes.
Because we're not brought up to do that kind of thing.
No, we're not. We don't do that at school, do they?
Encourage you to press pause.
No.
And that's where I think the missing link is with this work, is we need to say to people, most of us need help to remember to do it.
Yes. So how can we do that? Is it a case of putting it in your, and it sounds silly, put it in your diary, or set an alarm on your phone to say, I'm going to stop.
Yeah. So some of the apps, like Insight Timer, for example, has a bell.
Brilliant.
You can set that to go off. You can put reminders in your work diary.
Yeah.
You can put it on your to-do list.
Yes. Just put it on the list.
Yes. And one of the best ways is try and piggyback something you already do every day.
Yeah.
So if you already take a regular walk to the office or a walk to school, or you know that you enjoy your kind of mindful cup of tea every morning, try and piggyback something that happens regularly and see if you can layer it on top.
Yes,
that's
such
a good way of doing
it. I know some people write post-it notes and they stick that on
the
mirror. If they say, for example, they're you know, they're, I don't know, at work, or just want to be reminded before they go out, you know, they do have brightly coloured post-it notes.
Exactly.
I think anything that works for you, and we're all different.
Anything.
So thank you.
You're welcome.
And there you go. That's the benefit of doing these meditations and mindfulness exercises, and to get them regularly in your life. That, you know, there's no excuse, really. We can do it.
Yeah.
It's just making time for
when
it.
And it's only 2 minutes. But it is mad. It blows my mind how hard it is to get people to press play on their 2 minute micro zen even.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Let's do it, everybody.
Come on.
And would you say that that's your favourite zen hack, or is there?
There are so many.
Okay, well, let's say that's the one.
Leave it at
okay.
that, yeah.
So before you set up your amazing business, 10 of Zen, you were a CEO, weren't you, of a charity called Wings for Life, based in the UK. And I'm just guessing that role, along with many others, you know, you've developed so many skills over the years that you can you must have tapped into that to help you set up 10 of Zen. So if so, what, you know, how did that CEO role help you?
It's helped me so much. I wouldn't have been able to do what I'm doing now had I not had that job, I don't think, in terms of giving me enough confidence, probably.
Mm.
And I think I've learned so much that I apply to my work. I've learned so much about the importance and power of marketing. The importance of, and the fact that it takes time to nurture relationships. You know, my background's fundraising marketing. You know, you never just switched on a donor overnight.
No. True.
And also you learn so much in any job, but in a leadership role where basically I was kind of given a charity and a brief to scale it, and took it over 7 years from something. Well, nothing, from nothing into very much something. I learned so much about myself.
Yeah, I bet you did.
So much. And that stuff is, you know, the recurrent patterns in the way I work, the struggles I face in my work, they're still here, but I understand them much better.
Yeah.
So I think that helped me a lot to do what I'm doing now.
And you knew it was time to get out of the 9 to 5, although I'm sure you didn't work just 9 to 5. No, but
well, I kind of did.
Did you?
Yeah, I was very committed to, after having kids, I was very boundaried.
Okay,
and
yeah.
That's the difference, you see, though, when you're self-employed. Those boundaries just fall.
Yeah.
And that's quite a careful thing you have to balance.
Boundaries are a big thing. Mm. I also obviously have my own business, and I'm very strict with myself as to the, you know, not checking emails late at night and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And it doesn't always work. I'm a human like everybody else. But to have as strict a boundary as possible.
That's good.
It's a structure, isn't it? So it is. I just find it fascinating. And coming back to your current your current role as the founder of Ten of Zen, what's the vision that you have for the next? I mean, I know it's early days, right?
Early days.
But I'd love to know if you have any plans for the next 2 years.
Well,
roughly.
I do have a vision board upstairs.
Oh, do
I shall
you?
Spare that for you. Does that take another 45 minutes to go through that? I've got lots of ideas.
Yeah.
I did scribble something down here that I thought I'd just share from you, from my vision board, which is that I love what I do and I will love myself for doing it.
Oh, that's great.
So obviously I have loads of ideas. Mm. I've got some big thinking ideas, some kind of smaller, more grassroots level ideas. But I think my main mission is to move through this journey as compassionately as I can. Because I think it's really hard being a company of one, being self-employed, feeling that all the pressure is on you to show up for your business. And it's so easy to see what I often call the love stuff start dwindling away, losing that sense of compassion, the critic having a field day. So my main vision and commitment is to just keep doing what I'm doing, chase the big stuff and the small stuff, but try and like and love myself in the process, which is a bold statement. I'd like to say it's not easy, but
we've got it on record now.
Oh god.
No, we're all behind you, Nikki. I think everything that you're doing is to be applauded, and I think you're right to you know, have ideas like you have on your vision board, but to keep it real and not to exhaust yourself in the process, because this is an amazing journey.
Yeah.
So we're behind you.
You've
all
got
the
a
way.
Grow slow. I just think it's all about the grow slow. When you're self-employed and you only have a certain number of hours and you're the master of all things for your business, you've got to have a grow slow mentality. Otherwise, you'll burn out.
Yeah, you will. 100% agree. Very wise words. Mm. Love it. Do you foresee the challenges that mothers face today changing much over the next, 10 years or however long? And if so, how can we support the mothers of tomorrow, Nikki? Any golden nuggets that you can share with us?
10 years. So women won the vote 101 years ago.
Amazing, isn't it? 101
years.
It is
years. Amazing. And what we know is feminism's kind of moved in waves, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Over all those decades. But a lot of shifts still need to happen.
Mm.
You know, like is 10 years enough for us to be in a radically different place? I would love to say yes, but actually I doubt it. I'm saying this is about slowly
it's
chipping
gradual.
Away. It's gradual. Mm. And I believe passionately that, women, mums of the modern world, are in a really messy patch of feminism. You know, we were liberated, thank God. We were given the vote, thank God. We have a voice. We're being seen.
Mm.
And yet the mental load continues. We talked about this, but women still do 60% more unpaid work.
Yeah, I saw that statistic.
Yeah.
The Office of National Statistics had that out, didn't they?
Yeah.
I know.
It's
phenomenal.
Yeah.
And we were talking about that equates to something like £1 trillion per year of unpaid work, which sounds crazy, doesn't it?
Yes.
But the balance
is changing, yes. And it's gradual. Let's hope that it speeds up a bit.
Yeah, there's a long way to go, let's be honest. Yeah, and I think it's a really sticky, hard debate because it instantly brings up conflict, personal conflict and conflict in your home.
Yes.
And when I get this kind of pot stirred, so I can start being unhealthfully angry about this kind of ball that we've been passed through the generations. Yeah. And I think it's just about shift. It's about moving away from, I guess, most importantly with my work, moving away from a sense of there being guilt about us looking after ourselves to a sense where we model the importance of looking after ourselves to our children. And there's lots of shifts, but I think given my work, that's got to be the one I'm championing the most.
Yeah,
we say this, if sit down in front of our kids. I'll take my 10% in front of CBeebies for the sole purpose they want to show them this is what looking after your mental health looks like.
Good for you. I love that.
I don't do a great zen. It's not like I'm feeling very centered, but they see me.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have to kind of hide away in a quiet spot every time. I want them to see what looking after your mental health looks like.
Good for you. Yeah. Leading from the front. I love that. And by doing that, we are helping the younger generations.
We are.
And by vocalising this, we are helping the mothers of tomorrow understand that nothing needs to be hidden. That we don't need to feel guilty. We just need to look after ourselves. And it's self-love, isn't it? Many people find that difficult. I do know that from the work that I help people with their career mojos. Yeah. Self-love is a huge one. It's difficult. But if we help ourselves model the way, then it'll become more natural.
It's got to.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, I love that. And it's no surprise, really, like The Guardian had an article saying 40% of working mothers are more stressed than other people because we're trying to multitask, aren't we? And it's so difficult. We do have this part-time options, which is great, and there's flexi time, there's working from home, but ultimately, I don't know what you think, but there's a lot of society's expectations and different cultures, different countries obviously have different expectations.
And there's such a big load of questions, can women have it all?
We want it all, but
you know, that's why whole panel debates will be held just on that one very topic.
Exactly.
Because it's huge.
Yeah.
And I don't think we know the answer or necessarily got it right yet.
No, but your 10 of Zen is fantastic because it provides their support for people who are needing to step out of the mummy overload, the parent overload, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
And by doing that, we can become calmer, and then those around us will feel that calmness, won't they? So tap into it, everybody. Tap into it. So if you had a message for school children about motherhood,
what
would it be? Because we have young listeners, and they are wonderful. And so any wise words, if you had them?
Well, I'm a bit conflicted on this one, because part of me, my gut is all about wanting to support kids to be a bit more in the moment, don't worry.
Yes.
Don't worry about what kind of mum you're going to be. Just look at how awesome you are right now.
Yeah.
So I'd always encourage that shift. But if I was forced, I always use the phrase of something being messy and marvellous. You know, I'd love for our kids to know the messy side. Yeah, because we don't really expose our children to that, do we?
No.
You know, that they'll be invited to show up every day for people they love. What a privilege. Yeah. But they probably will go grey in the process. You know?
Well, I can't comment on me. I was pointing at my head there. I love that. No, I really, really love that. Messy and marvellous. And I have to say, my children, who are now teenagers, they have taught me so much. They are the best people, actually, and they and I wouldn't be who I am today without them.
No.
So it's definitely a journey worth venturing on, an adventure, and you have to lap it up, the challenging moments with the not so easy moments, but the wonderful moments too. You just lap it up. Do you have a motto or a mantra that you live by?
I would say the one that always springs to mind is, I am not what I achieve.
Oh, okay. I like that. I am not what I achieve.
Yes.
And that's completely different to the young Nikki that you're talking about. I love that. Yeah. And look at the difference that you've made in a positive way.
Yeah.
And you've grown into yourself.
Yeah, stepping away from that strive over drive obsession with achievements. And I'm not saying I've switched that off.
Yeah.
But that is always a really important reminder for me, about that.
Love it. Absolutely love that. And how can we spread the word of 10 of Zen?
Well, I think you've done a very good job, Katie.
Thank you. Do my best.
You do very well. I mainly use Instagram as my main platform, so that's at Ten of Zen, T-E-N of Zen, Z-Z-E-N. And then my website, tenofzen.com, number10ofzen.com, and that's confusing, isn't
it? Yeah, no, it's good, it's good.
And then, yeah, basically, you know, just like we're sat here together, I'm all about just getting out there, collaborating, putting this stuff into as many different places as possible and just seeing what happens, really.
Love it.
So, yeah.
Absolutely love what you're doing to help the amazing mums out there. And, you know, the services that you provide are fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Thank you, Nikki. Seriously, thank you for joining me today. I have just loved every minute. It's been so interesting to hear about Ten of Zen and the amazing work you're doing supporting the mothers of today and actually the mothers of tomorrow, because we're helping to provide that sort of structure and support network. So I love that. I personally feel really enlightened. I love that Zen exercise that we did earlier.
I'm gonna get you on my Zen squad, Katie.
I'm going to be signing up. No, you've really enlightened me by the information that you've shared, and you've completely, you know, helped many, I'm sure, through the experiences that you've been very open about. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you for being open about that. It's great to know that your services and tools are available. We really do need to slow down and zone in. And through what you're doing, you are going to help many do that. You already are helping many do that. But by having this conversation, we're spreading the word. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Katie.
To find out more about Ten of Zen, as Nikki said, you can go to www.tenofzen.com, and that's 10ofzen.com. And their details are also on my website, which is www.meaningfulrecruitment.co.uk. Nikki also mentioned
makebirthbetter.com. Yeah.
And it's makebirthbetter.com, just to repeat Nikki there. So if anybody thinks, oh, I'm going to have a look at that, then do it. Makebirthbetter.com. Thank you for downloading this podcast.